So I guess what you're saying is we're going to continue to see elevated prices of coal, correct? Relatively speaking.
I think, for now, both the thermal and the met markets are just kind of here, right? In recent ranges. There aren't a lot of catalysts to really, push them to the upside in the short term. But obviously, when you start to look out into next year, the year after that, toward the end of the decade, you can see that there's a new cycle building. And we'll be here for it. I mean, the cycles for steel and for power demand and those sorts of things kind of move very clockwork oriented. And, steel cycle is about 5 years. The power demand cycle, which is now growing due to, the pretty massive build out of AI data centers. You're getting through a rock out here in the DC area without hitting one. That's going to drive demand off into the future. But yeah, like I said before, the costs have just come up to a point where that cyclicality, which is predictable, has kind of a new range. Looking off into the future, I think it looks relatively bright relative to last time.
Matt Warder, good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great, Andy. It's good to be with you again, and hi out there to all your listeners, and let's talk some markets.
Yeah, I really want to do that. But you know what? I want to set it up first, and just to give you, I don't want to embarrass you, but in my world, which is very pretty much your world, but you are considered the guy in coal. And also I mentioned to you off camera, coal is a great proxy. I see it as a great proxy for the economy, not only here domestically, but the global economy. But before we get into all that, let's start with where you see coal going, where coal is at. And then I also want to work out the different types of coal just for our new viewers and listeners. So yeah, where is coal at, if you would? And to give you a heads up, you called it really well last time I had you on.
Well, we try. The nice thing about the down part of the cycle is that there's always a physical limitation on all of it, right? So, prices can only get to a point where companies start to lose money, and after they lose money, then you see a supply response. Per our friend Rick Rule, low prices are the cure for low prices, and high prices are the cure for high prices, et cetera, et cetera. So this is the point where we get to see how markets really work. And the kind of physical bottom for met coal prices is down around the 160, 170 level, something like that. And for Newcastle, that's more like, call it $100. But the weird thing is that when I think about the beginning of my career, where we used to see kind of like normal mid-cycle peaks is now where the trough cycle floors tend to be. I mean, that's just how cost inflation has been such a theme in the mining industry writ large since COVID. We're in a new paradigm, so to speak, with regard to pricing, and it's going to be very, very difficult to go back to the before times in that regard.
Got it. Well, that is very interesting. It's really, you can work out just anything from world growth to even economic policy, if you would, not to go into all of that. But yeah, so I guess what you're saying is we're going to continue to see elevated prices of coal, correct? Relatively speaking.
I think, for now, both the thermal and the met markets are just kind of here, right? In recent ranges. There aren't a lot of catalysts to really, push them to the upside in the short term. But obviously, when you start to look out into next year, the year after that, toward the end of the decade, you can see that there's a new cycle building. And we'll be here for it. I mean, the cycles for steel and for power demand and those sorts of things kind of move very clockwork oriented. And, steel cycle is about 5 years. The power demand cycle, which is now growing due to, the pretty massive build out of AI data centers. You're getting through a rock out here in the DC area without hitting one. That's going to drive demand off into the future. But yeah, like I said before, the costs have just come up to a point where that cyclicality, which is predictable, has kind of a new range. Looking off into the future, I think it looks relatively bright relative to last time.
Got it. And before we look at some charts that you wanted to show us, to all the viewers and listeners that have not heard you before, give us the two different types of coal. And you educated me on this. This was about 2 years ago. I just thought coal was used for power, if you would. And I was thinking of second and third world countries, and even here, if you would, in the Southeast or in Appalachia. But I wasn't aware of the different types of coal.
Sure. Well, you know, when most people think of coal, they think of, you know, coal that goes to the power generation sector. We call that thermal coal. The defining characteristic of that is its heat content and any kind of impurities, right? So the higher the heat, generally, the higher the price, and the lower the impurities, the higher the price. Chief impurity that we tend to track is sulfur. When you burn sulfur containing elements in the, you release sulfur dioxide, which can create acid rain. For the more sulfur a coal has, the more it gets penalized, but that's generally the case there. Now there are other coals, metallurgical coals, that are used to make coke, which is sort of like, think of it as like baseball sized chunks of charcoal, right? And coke, which is pure carbon, serves as both the fuel and the reductant for iron ore in a blast furnace. If you think of carbon plus iron oxide, which is FeO2, the carbon picks off one of the oxygen molecules to make FeO, and you get carbon monoxide that gets driven off. And then you pull out the molten iron and blow ozone over top of it to make just molten Fe steel. Not all coals will agglomerate like that and make charcoal. Some of them, when you heat them up, just turn to dust. So that's like a special subtype of coal, which fetches a higher price because there's just less of it in general. But those are the two markets, and we can talk about both of them and their cost structures and price outlooks and all those sorts of things. But the downstream demand components are very different.
Got it. So let's actually start working out. You wanted to show us some charts in regards to price. Sure. And where we're at in this cycle. Go ahead and do that
for us. Yeah. So we'll start with met coal. Met coal has a pretty easy thesis. Can you guys see that okay?
Yep.
All right. So met coal is, first of all, catches a higher price relative to thermal coal. But what I wanted to point about is the cycle. So the previous cycle started in 2019. Peaked in 2022, and then we hit a trough in 2024. That's 5 years. If I pulled it back another 5 years, going back to 2015, going back to 2014, we'll take it a second to catch up here.
Yeah, it's interesting to note too. It's exactly somewhat what you just said. The peak or the floor is now really where the peak was at previously. But go ahead.
Yeah, that's okay. So, here's a new cycle in 2015, peaks in 2016, troughs in 2020. Mm-hmm. This is not an accident. This is just kind of how that market works, right? But if I go back to the 2019 view, what we'll see is this area in here that used to be the peaks of the down cycle have become kind of the floor of the new cost cycle here. And if I put two lines on the charts there, I mean, you can just see it. So here's the peak. We're down at trough now, a few years later. And you can see prices just kind of bouncing off this 173, I think is about the lowest that we got on the futures. Spot got down as low as 160. And what you're seeing here is just, this is where costs are now. So if the price moves meaningfully below this level, you're going to see mine shut down. Supply gets tighter. And really what's been driving this is if I put up, China steel exports, which I should be able to do. There we go. You should be able to see to some degree. There we go. China steel exports rising over this period where the price is falling. So that's kind of what's going on in the background, right? Mm-hmm. Now, since 2024, the CLX boards have begun to decline. And that's why you're seeing a leveling off of prices here. This still has some work to do. You can see back down where historical levels were at about, you know, it's about 5 million or is it 50 million tons a month or thereabouts. But it's a per year. This is about a 50 million ton a year annualized rate. And that is pretty much doubled. But we're 11.18. We're about 15% off at the top. And I expect this to kind of normalize over the course of the next 2 years back in this range as China addresses overcapacity. So when that does happen, that will allow India to kind of get going with terms of steel demand. And they're short metallurgical coal. So we should see another cycle up begin. Let's call it, you know, we're going to bottom between this year and next. And we should see one of these slopes starting in 2027. So now is kind of a good time to look at, you know, beginning positions for those who are incredibly patient for the next, you know, 5 years for some of the metallurgical coal stocks. Now this theme, even when I switch over to thermal coal, it's going to be pretty much the same. You can see like cycle peak here, you know, mid-cycle peak was around $70-$71 for Newcastle thermal coal. This is 6,000 kcal per kilogram coal coming out of Australia. And, you know, the bottom now is probably 95. That's just how much costs have come up in the last 5 years, mostly exacerbated by this period here. And once you let that cat out of the bag, it's hard to crawl it back. I've had some success in the U.S. about pulling costs back, but it's been a genuine slog for the equities.
Got it. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I might as well just pull up, you know, this is the recent performance of all the equities. I've got them kind of grouped here, but if you have any questions in the meantime,
And I'd love to talk, and that's exactly where I want to go to is the equities. But before we go there, talk a little bit about the outlook. And I say this apolitically, we've obviously had a lot of tariffs. How is that impacting the price of coal and really the price of steel? And you mentioned China. It's obvious, it seems to me that's going to have an impact. And again, I'm very naive to this in the coal market. What do you see the impact on the price?
Well, that's a good question. And because it's geopolitical in origin, you know, my track record in that department is unblemished by success, right? So it's one of those things where I don't know what that answer is going to be. I don't know what ultimate policy is going to do. I know how to react to the uncertainty, I guess, is the better way to put it. And that, you know, with regard to two key countries, China and India, I think that's where you have to place your focus mostly especially for the met coal sector. So the first thing that has to happen, which China sort of addressed in their five-year plan, is they're going to address overcapacity, both in coal and in steel. That has yet to happen. We'll see how that materializes. I tend to be I'll believe it when I see it, sort of analyst in that regard. China makes a lot of statements, and some of them are even true. So, you know, I don't know at what pace that's going to resolve itself. I just know that over time it will resolve. And waiting in the wings is India. And India has built out a pretty large amount of blast furnace capacity, not to mention power generation. We haven't gotten onto that side yet. But China relaxing on exports will allow India to start ramping up their own domestic production. So I kind of see that as a little bit of a replacement. In terms of overall demand, I think for the next couple of years or so, you're going to see kind of flattish to sideways, you know, crude steel demand. I think steel prices kind of have to go up meaningfully before we see, you know, another upcycle for met coal. So we're, you know, all of the cost components for steel have kind of compressed. Iron ore is still relatively high. Coking coal is still relatively high. Steel margins are getting squeezed. We've seen this a lot of times before. Just give it some time and let the overcapacity resolve itself. I think 2027 is going to be a pretty pretty fantastic year.
A banger year. Got it.
I have a quick question about, I'm looking at those two charts, the spike that happened in back 3 years ago, 2022, was that technical in nature? Was it fundamental in nature? What caused it? So what could repeat itself?
Sure. Well, the spike itself is the Russia-Ukraine war. That can't repeat itself.
I see. Okay.
At least if it does repeat itself, we're in big trouble.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
The run-up to that was really the you know, supply-demand shock when supply chains restarted after COVID and there wasn't supply at the ready to do it. So that was in a really exaggerated period of the market. I don't think this one is going to be as violent, but it's going to take the same kind of shape. You know, we're going to move to a mid-cycle peak where demand is growing and supply in particular in the U.S. like really isn't. We used to be the swing supplier to the world for met coal, and we just can't do it anymore. Like from a regulatory perspective, once you push down on supply, it's very hard to replace it. So there's no swing left in the swing supply. And that's been part of the reason, both on the thermal and on the met side. The U.S. just doesn't have supply flexibility to shift into the rest of the world anymore. And that's a theme that's not going to change. So I think the spikes get spikier when we have them.
Right.
But I don't think we're going to see Russia-Ukraine level where you have a supply shortage and then an exogenous event that like just blows everything out of the water. I think that's a one in a lifetime sort of confluence of events there.
Got it. Matt, so you just mentioned that we were, I mean, for lack of a better words, we would make up, if you would, that excess supply shortages the U.S. would. Now, you don't see that. I just want to make sure I'm getting you correct. We can't do that anymore. And when I say we here in the U.S., do you see another country, another region taking up that, taking on that?
No, it's kind of similar to the broader theme of underinvestment in mining that, you know, the whole sector has been talking about for more than a decade now. You know, over my career, you know, which started in the mid 2000s, you know, we've seen this just exponential decrease in development capital. And, you know, it takes about a decade for those sorts of trends to play out. But we're seeing it now. You know, you've seen it in copper to some degree. You've seen it, you know, certainly seen it in coal. Because you know, talk about an underfunded you know, supply chain. Coal is, I mean, it's so hard to get financing to do anything, and certainly here in the U.S., it's still very difficult. Like you have to go through, you know, private credit. Banks are getting, you know, less ESG minded, and I think that capital will free up over time. You know, when they see, you know, just how short we are. You know, on that venture, like Jefferies, you know, was willing to help finance, do bridge financing for the Peabody Anglo deal. You know, you wouldn't have seen that in 2021 or 2022. So like those attitudes are easing, but it's still just, you know, hard to find, and interest rates aren't helping either, you know.
Yeah, just make it more expensive to finance a mine. And again, as you said, it's really the common theme. And I talk to mining CEOs every day almost, and mm-hmm. all over the world. And it's just, again, the whole story is very similar to what you're telling. You know, good luck in financing a copper mine and then getting that into production in the near term. It's just not going to happen. So it only adds to the deficit. Let's talk about the equities here. And it's funny, not funny, but it's interesting. So many people, well, in my world, they're looking for deep value. I see coal. I want your thoughts on that, but I see coal companies, equities as a potential, if you would, just really going on your lead, because they've been so beaten up, and yet, correct me if I'm wrong, so there's deep value there. We're looking at hopefully an upward cycle here in the next 12 to 18 months or so. And a lot of these stocks also pay really great dividends. Correct me if I'm wrong.
There are a few, yeah. And we'll talk about those, I think, as we go on. I have the equities kind of grouped in, you know, I have the diversifieds up here with Glencore and BHP, and U.S. Met Coal, hybrids, U.S. Thermal Coal, and then here's the Australia Met, Australia Hybrid. So we'll kind of go down the list. But when you look at the 1 year return, on most of these. I mean, it's going to be, with the exception of a couple, you know, BHP's done okay. The iron ore price has done well. But like Alpha's down, you know, 60% off the peak or whatever it is. And, you know, still down 30% on the year. We know, you know, from previous experience, and I'll pull up the, let me pull up the 5-year chart so people can see just how high this stock ran. Got all the way up to, went from $3 all the way up to $4.50. And most of this in here, you notice how from 22 to 23, here's the Russia-Ukraine peak. And then, you know, it takes about a year for companies to lock in higher prices. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so the stock kind of ate glue in here. But what was going on, they had all these huge prices and they put on their buyback. And so the buyback kept the stock in this really predictable range for a long time. And then when you got the confluence of events of, you know, signing contracts here, resulting in price increases here, along with the buyback, along with this huge rally in small caps and high short interest, and you just got an explosive upside. And look where we are now. We're right back in this kind of 100 to 150-ish range. And Alpha has reduced costs down below $100. They should be, you know, at least, you know, reasonably profitable or breaking even for the next few quarters, even with low prices. And their buyback has been turned back on. They got their cash flow, or sorry, their balance sheet cash position above 500 million. So I think you'll see kind of a floor being put in under this stock here going forward. I want to find out where the next, you know, we're going through a seasonal restocking. I want to kind of take a look down here and see if we can get back down into the 130s or 120 sometime in October or November. That's probably where I'd set up shop, so to speak.
Got it.
And let's just go down the list here. Let's look at Warrior, which is the next one on the for U.S. Met Coal. Warrior's price cycle is going to look a little bit different. They're growing production. This is a, let's just call it less high short interest than AMR. So not quite as torquey. There's not a buyback, but they're going to increase top line revenue as their new mine Blue Creek comes on. But I mean, you can see that the same kind of pattern here. We had the Liberation Day lows. We had the lows in June when Met Coal prices bottomed. And, you know, most of the rest of the time we're going to be kind of up in this range. So I'll pause there before we head on to NRP and others. Do you have any questions about something?
Yeah, I do. So when you're evaluating a stock, what is your checklist, if you would? And I'm sure it's different between the larger players, the bigger players, and the really small juniors. But what exactly are you looking for?
The nice thing about our universe is that it's pretty small. Right. So we don't have to look very far. You know, there's four or five met peer plays in the US. You know, there are a couple of hybrids and there are, you know, one or two thermal coal peer plays. And that's about it. If you have access to, you know, foreign exchanges, you know, you have the same, you got another three or four stocks in each category in Australia as well. It's really all that can be considered. Everything else is either a project or too microcappy to kind of get really involved with. And, you know, liquidity's also an issue. So I tend to play in the larger producer end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, all of those have, you want to be able to capture the beta of the price move. You know, I like the management teams that are more aligned with shareholders that are instituting buybacks. I prefer buybacks to dividends during a price cycle hike.
Sure.
But in the troughs down here, you have to consider yield as well. And my friends Porter Collins and Vinny Daniel noted on their own podcast, inaugural podcast, I think, just a week or so ago, that they were talking about looking for alternatives to treasury yield, right?
Right.
And they felt, I think the comment was, if I might paraphrase it, was that, you know, they prefer the balance sheet of a company like Alliance Resource Limited Partners, for instance, which, you know, carries a 10 to 11% yield, which at these levels is really attractive relative to, you know, the 4% you might get from holding treasuries. Not to mention the coal company's balance sheet looks a lot better than the United States. So they kind of, you know, looked at some stocks like that. I think I'd put Yancoal in that category as well. Alliance Resource Limited Partners, Yancoal, Natural Resource Partners. Those are the three, I think, that are focused more on the yield side, on dividend side, which is, I think it's pretty advantageous at this point in the price cycle. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a, you know, I tend to prefer the torquier buyback names during an upcycle, and I know we're getting ready for one now, so I'm more focused on those. But there's really, I mean, really good value in terms of yield from, you know, two or three stocks as well in the coal sector. We can talk about the difference between those two.
Yeah, let's talk about that. But before we do that, is there a difference between the Australian stocks and the ones here domestically?
I mean, the biggest thing that I would note would be that during an upcycle, there's been a new royalty regime in Queensland, Australia, which is where most of the metallurgical coal production is. So when we get into that next price cycle, the government is going to swoop in and take a lot of that upside, okay, unless there is a law change. It also...
Great info, by the way. Great info. Go ahead.
Yeah. So it also moves the cost curve up pretty significantly for met coal as those royalties kick in. So, and not to mention, you know, now in this regime, we have a little bit of US dollar currency risk as well. Mm-hmm. So we've seen the Australian dollar increase in relative value to the US dollar, you know, moving from 0.6162 up to 0.66 recently. Well, you know, they have to pay all their workers in Australian dollars. So that means that the cost curve relative for the Australians is coming up relative to the US.
Another great point. Yes.
Yeah. So there's, you know, the higher costs go up just in general, the higher the floor is for met coal. And I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing it, you know, kind of languish here. You can't really move up because steel margins are terrible, you know, in China and India. And it can't really move down because if miners start losing money, then the whole economy is going to slow down globally. So we're stuck in this range that's going to be pretty tight until something breaks. And we've had enough mines catch on fire that I'm going to bet we break to the upside first.
Got it. Let's go back to the equities. You're going to explain the difference, or I forget sure. The question, but go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to point out, I'll just point them out on the screen. And so I've got them organized by group here. You know, AMR, I pointed out, and Warrior Met Coal are the two, you know, most notable US pure plays. But I should point out Ramaco Resources as well, because this has been the best performer over the last month. And the reason is they have a you know, prospective mine in Wyoming, the Brook Mine, which has, you know, relatively decent concentrations of rare earths. Now, they don't have a processing facility. You know, this has all been trading very much on vibes, but it's, you know, they moved from a coal multiple down here in the, you know, 2.8 to, you know, 5 or 6 range in terms of EV to EBITDA up to like 12. That's more of a, you know, it's kind of halfway between coal and I have MP Materials down here as a comp. Another rare earth stock. It's at 36 multiple. Mm-hmm. So they're sitting in the middle. And I have no idea how to project what their stock price is going to be. But as long as rare earths are going to do really well, to the extent that they're going to be involved in the conversation, they may go up as well. So that gets out of my bailiwick really quickly. Let me point out the yield codes. Natural Resource Partners here. They have they're a royalty company and a master limited partnership. So, you know, the tax implications if you own them in a 401k, but they're a great yield vehicle. Their stock, and I'll go ahead and pull them up, has been just absolutely glued to this range between, let's call it 95 and 105. for a while, you know, 90 to 110 in more volatile times. But this one doesn't yield much right now. I think it's like 2 or 3%, but they'll be debt-free by, if not by the end of this year, by the beginning of next year. And they have said in no uncertain terms that they plan to take the residual cash flow and return it to shareholders, either in the form of, you know, special dividends or buybacks. So,
excellent. Both their music to my ears.
Yeah. So this is one that's just really easy. Just buy it on weakness and, hodl for, the foreseeable future. This is going to be a pretty good yield stock. And if I pulled up the five-year chart, you can see that it's really benefited as it has eliminated its debt.
And again, that is a royalty company, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. To all my viewers and listeners, this is not advice, but this is my own thoughts. I love royalty companies. Absolutely love them. That is just my own personal preference. Go ahead, Matt.
No, that's. I mean, me too. You don't have the operational risk of a mine, so you can, you know, NRP is not a stock that I ever even look at the share price. I get alerts when it goes down below 100 or hits, 90, 99, 95, 90. And when that happens, I just go buy some. This is something that I keep. Honestly, it's more like a savings account for me than it is anything else. The other one that I should point out, and I'll go back to my screen, is Alliance Resource Partners. This one's yielding like 10 or 11%. And you can see it's down pretty significantly, 12% or whatever over the last 3 months. That's kind of what you could expect from a risk reward basis. Mm-hmm. We bottomed at around this level here earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. If I pulled up let's go back 5 years, they had a nice run last year, but you can see where the range is. Worst case scenario down here, best case scenario, they're not buying back stock, they're just doing yield. So I think this is the range. We've had a peak, we're gonna bottom out at a higher level over here. And another one I feel pretty comfortable, like if they're paying 10% a year, then even if the stock were to decline back down here, you're kind of even for the year. So I think this is a pretty decent yield play. I don't see a massive amount of volatility in the stock price going forward. Prices next year will be a little bit lower, so we might see a deceleration in terms of revenue, but they have natural gas exposure. They have some Bitcoin exposure. They've diversified the revenue stream a little bit. For yield focused investors, I think this is a pretty good situation. Great management too. Joe Kraft is one of the best in the business, and Jesse Parrish, who's also pretty fantastic executive, just left Blackhawk and moved over there. So I think they're set up very well for the foreseeable future.
What are the capitalizations of those stocks on average? What are we looking at?
The capitalization. So 1.8 billion for Alpha, 3 billion for Warrior, almost 3 billion for Alliance.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is more.
It's pretty significant. Yep.
Okay. They're large companies.
Yep. Yeah. So on the, and again, Alliance is a thermal coal producer, mostly domestic. We're bullish on domestic power prices. They'll benefit from that to some degree. I should point out also the hybrids. So these are companies that produce both thermal and met coal. Core mm-hmm. Natural Resources, also pretty massive buyback. They have, this is the combination of what used to be CONSOL and Arch. CONSOL, primarily thermal coal producer, lowest cost mines in the U.S. That generates about $300-400 million of free cash flow per year. The Arch piece of this, I don't think is currently generating much free cash flow, but it's met heavier. So I kind of view, if you think about the two companies, the CONSOL piece is going to pay for the buyback going forward. The Arch piece is basically a call option on met coal prices. So met coal prices meaningfully appreciate, this stock is really going to, I think, benefit during the next go around. And there's also Peabody. So Peabody had agreed to buy Anglo's coal mines in Australia. Let's go back to a one-year view. And their stock got absolutely punished for it. Let's pull it up. Went all the way from like, you know, $30 down to 10. And since then, it has come back all the way up almost to 20. They back in August, they announced that they were going to pull out of the deal because one of the mines that they had bought fire back in March, which they consider constitutes a material adverse change. Anglo has insisted that it hasn't been. That's going to go to court, but the deal was going to put Peabody in a massive amount of debt, and now it might not happen. So what you're seeing here is the kind of realization of folks that, well, maybe this deal won't go through after all. So, you know, between 30 and 10 is close to 20. I think this is kind of the measure of the uncertainty of the market, right? If the deal doesn't go through and we get, you know, prices back to local highs, you know, this is probably where we're headed. If the deal does go through, then I think you're going to see a reconsolidation back in here to the mid-teens. So it's, for me, BTU is path dependent on that outcome. I think it's more likely that the deal's not going to go through. We're going to wait a couple of years and we'll see what a settlement is. But that's it. I mean, Anglo could reduce the purchase price by, you know, $500 million, $1 billion tomorrow, and maybe it does go through. I don't know.
Right.
That's beyond my pay grade.
Yeah. Any two questions, any other equities that you want to talk about? Number one, and then number two, I want to make sure we're respectful of the time. So I just want to get, you know, what should investors be aware of in the market really going from now until the end of the year?
Yeah. In Australia, Yancoal, I mentioned, as a yield vehicle. It's also down pretty significantly here over the past little bit, and it is actually really fantastic yield on this one. There is probably some acquisition risk. They didn't have the best earnings. This is ex-dividend action that you see here, but you know, pretty firm bottom, I think, around the mid fours, and this is one I want to accumulate at the bottom parts of cycles. The type of coal they sell is Australia 5500 kcal. That price is miserable at the moment, but their cost structure is pretty good. If they do make an acquisition, which, you know, they might be in play for, you know, a renewed Anglo deal, then I think you see a return into this level, and that'll be a good place to pick it up. My suspicion is they won't bite off more than they can chew on an M&A basis, so I think the yield is pretty safe there. Whitehaven Coal is another one. It's a hybrid. They produce, they bought two mines from BHP that produce met coal. They've kind of consolidated as well. But I mean, these are, you know, in my eyes, kind of the top two Australian coal companies to look at. And this is starting to be a pretty nice chart there too. Those are the two that I would point out. I'll also point out, that is NuScale. That is a nuclear stock, SMR Australia Equity. Here's Stanmore Resources. These guys produce kind of second tier hard coking coals and some PCI and some stuff that gets discounted relative to PLV. And they're in the process of kind of bottoming out too. Margin's not huge here, but I think any inflection in coking coal prices that would drag up semi-soft, that would drag up PCI, that would drag up like all these kind of lower sub-qualities of metallurgical coal, I think Stanmore probably could have a good go of it. I can't stomach the liquidity on the Hong Kong exchange personally, but Mongolia Mining Company has had a good 3 months. It's up pretty significantly. up 21% over the past month. South Gobi produces far lower quality coal, but even they've had a pretty solid 3 months. So if you're if you can stomach that, those are some interesting ones to look at too. But I, you know, being a U.S. guy, I mostly kind of keep my sights on these because I'll get the liquidity for it. I think Glencore is kind of a sneaky good play too, because I'm pretty optimistic copper prices are going to stay relatively high. But that's kind of the universe of stocks. You know, if I had to pick five, you know, I put in no particular order, just go kind of down the list, you know, AMR, HCC, NRP, and then I'd probably put, you know, Core on the hybrids, Alliance on the thermal side, you know, as far as US stocks go. If we were going international, I'd put Yancoal and Whitehaven probably on that watch list as well. They all kind of have different performance levels when prices get going. So, you know, they're all different tools for the toolbox, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. And to all my listeners and viewers, this is great, great information. And as Matt said, use it as a, really, this is part of your toolbox here. I would just create lists and watch, and that's what I'm doing. That's what Dennis is doing. Matt, give me your thoughts really now. You said this is, you're looking at a start of this going into 27. What are your thoughts really, if you have any thoughts, going from now until the end of the year?
From now until the end of the year, I think that at least for coal markets, we're going to perform seasonally, right? So we've moved from summer restocking season, demand season. So now, you know, as we move into October and November, we move into what we call the shoulder season, or really just, you know, on the thermal coal side, restocking has already happened. Those deliveries will happen over the next few months as they move into winter for high demand season, and not a lot of spot buying gets done. So usually that's a seasonal period of weakness for the coal equities. You know, Thanksgiving is a great time to look for coal stocks that are on sale. For the last few Novembers in a row, like I can remember even on the run-up, sweating Arch Coal over Thanksgiving because it had hit a new bottom. I forget where it was then. I think it bottomed around $75 and then went all the way to $150 over the next 3 months. So, wow. Yeah. So like, it, you know, for me, I tried to separate out the, you know, the higher beta plays from the yield goes, depending on your approach, you know, put one or the other on a watch list. And then, and again, from seasonal perspective, I think with, you know, pricing bottoms in November, and then 2026 is kind of going to be a year where, you know, the market kind of digests this part of the cycle and moves on to the next phase. Whether we're talking about growing AI demand, you know, domestically or in Europe, or whether we're talking about just you know, an inflection in steel markets, I think, you know, now is a good time to start paying attention and get set up for the run into the end of the decade.
Got it. Great advice. And I want to give a public shout out to Trader Ferg again. He was the gentleman that introduced me to you and put me in contact. He thinks the world of you.
Ferg's a great guy. Love that dude.
He is. He is a great guy, and he's very gracious to me. So, but Matt, if people want to do business with you, want to follow you, want to know more about you, how do they find you?
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, easiest way is the website. We run a publication called The Coal Trader. You can find us at on Substack at thecoaltrader.substack.com. You can find our full website at thecoaltrader.com. You can follow me on Twitter at MF, as in Frank, MF Warder. You can follow The Coal Trader as well with a subscription. We have a private Twitter feed. I haven't been using it very much, but I tag it a lot, so it's been a good resource in that regard. But yeah, that's where you can come check me out online. And then obviously, if I can be of any help, just reach out on those platforms, and I'm pretty responsive. So
Matt, you're very responsive, or at least to me, you've been very responsive. And also to all my viewers and listeners, Matt is not only an expert, or the expert, I think, in this sector of the economy and in this commodity, but he's one of the most gracious analysts you'll ever meet or talk with. So I want to thank you for that, Matt.
Oh, it's my pleasure, man. Love talking about coal anytime. This sector just gets, you know, very, very little love, even in the broader metals and mining sector, which is, you know, also mutually underappreciated, I think, you know, by the rest of the world. So love talking about it. And
thank you, Matthew. It's very educational for me. Very educational.
Happy to do it, Dennis. Anytime, guys.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Take care.